So I just want to highlight that it is the last day of the G20 summits here in Toronto. And everywhere that the G20 and G8 policies and structures hit, they are met with violence through war and occupation, through increasing hunger, through increasing poverty. And everywhere they meet, they are met with resistance. From Pittsburgh to Genoa, we've seen this time and again. They are met with resistance because of the violence they are inflicting on people around the world every single day. And now with the $1 billion security budget here in Toronto, we have seen that thousands of cops have come in to Toronto, into our community, and used that force and used that brutality against the community members here in Toronto, against community members from other places who have visited us and who have said that they also disagree with G20 and G8 policies and structures. We have seen that riot police have not been protecting their precious cop cars that we are seeing on television. They're not protecting the windows, but they are encircling groups of people when they are in smaller groups, and they are taking their batons and they are taking their shields, and they are using that against the people. In numerous jail support rallies that we have had in the past 24 hours, where people are going to the jails to support their friends as they leave, we are finding that cops are also meeting them there with brutality. Riot police, armed cops are circling them, are telling them to leave, and they're not providing an avenue for them to do so. They are then circling these demonstrators, they are snatching them. We've seen plainclothes cops snatch several demonstrators who are supporting their peers coming out of jail. We've seen them being snatched, being thrown into cars. We have seen cops prepared with tasers. This is not acceptable when we are already resisting the G8 and G20 violence, the violence that comes from their structures and policies.
Something burns inside me, man. Can't explain, won't understand. Anger, rage, and war cry. Fear, fate, and lullaby. And wake up.
Something burns inside me, man. Won't explain. Santa Cruz, 101 FM, freakradio.org. On the line with me right now is Ron Anisich.
How are you doing, Bob?
Ron, how you doing?
What's good. Up? It's good to speak with you again.
You're talking to us from Toronto, Canada, where the wonderful G20 summit, it's pretty much over by now, right?
Yes, it is. The leaders all left pretty hastily on Sunday. I don't know if that was the plan or not, but that seems to be what happened, yeah.
So what happened from your point of view? You live and work downtown in Toronto, correct?
Yeah, it was pretty interesting to watch the whole city slowly turn into a bit of a police state. I work about 5 miles from the convention center, from the security perimeter, I guess you'd put it, the wall, the fence, the barricade, whatever. About 2 weeks before the summit, we got told that we couldn't put our sandwich boards out in front of our businesses, which is something that is commonly done here in Toronto. I'm sure it's the same in most cities, but they were so careful about things like that. And at the same time, they're passing our provincial government gave the police in secret, gave them extended powers to arrest people within a certain distance of the security perimeter. We watched thousands of police officers come in from other jurisdictions to help in the security effort, which costs Canadian taxpayers $1.2 billion. That's just the security tab. They took the downtown core of the fifth largest city in North America. We have 4 million people living in Toronto, and they took the downtown core and basically sealed it off for the week leading up to the summit. And I believe the barricades are still up as we speak, although I'm not certain of that.
What happened? It all started pretty much, Friday, Thursday, built up to it slowly?
Well, there have been a number of events that mostly went off fairly peacefully, including the demonstration on Friday, at which a mainstream news television reporter was fairly, was beaten by the police, despite the fact that he had identified himself as a member of the media. On Sunday, a number of protesters who were protesting peacefully on Sunday were just surrounded by the police and arrested en masse. That was at the corner of Queen and Spadina, okay, where there had been some trouble the night before with burning police cars. And it's where the majority of what the media is describing as vandalism here happened. They're occasionally describing it as rioting, but I think that description goes a little bit far for what I saw happening. Anyway.
Yeah, so tell us what happened on Saturday night when all the ruckus happened.
YouTube. You know, you're at a protest, and I'll tell you what happened, Bob, is actually our cops demonstrated a fair amount of savvy at this, in that they needed an excuse to, curtail people's civil liberties and use violence against them. So what they did is they left a few strategically placed police cars abandoned in the middle of a protest. So the results of that were pretty predictable. There were a couple burning police cars, and I got to say, nothing like that has ever happened at a protest in Toronto before. I go to a fair number of them, and that's pretty off the scale. I have a hard time believing that there may have been police officers in the crowd working undercover, trying to incite people into carrying out some of the vandalism that took place.
Well, there's worse violence at after hockey matches, correct?
Well, there's worse violence just down the street. I'm telling you, the way I look at it is, if there's two sides to this little scuffle, there's one side that's breaking a few windows and lighting a few inanimate objects on fire, and there's another side that are heavily armed, have a $1.2 billion budget, and who are wantonly beating the crap out of people and illegally detaining people.
Yeah,
I mean, that is violence. Breaking a window doesn't rate as violence compared to the guys who are getting beat up down the street. I mean, I had several friends who've been arrested and detained for more than 24 hours and then released without charge. That's not constitutional. That should never that should never happen.
Well,
from that should never happen here.
So I understand that the so-called protest area was at a park that was blocks away
Queens Park. Actually, it's not really a park. That's our provincial legislature.
Okay.
And
that was the official protest area for protesters?
Well, it's been used for many protests in the past, and it was the, that was the kind of safe, well, they called it a safe zone, but Saturday started off with the police lunging into crowds and making arrests of peaceful protesters before there was any violence or, you know, in fact, before there was even a march.
So tell us about that. What started that off?
I think what the police were doing was trying to, I mean, they, you know, if you were to ask them what their rationale was, they're trying to pick out leaders. Now, I'm an anarchist. I think you're familiar with how anarchists organize, and I'm not exactly sure who they're talking about, but I suspect they were activists who had possibly had a record with the police, or who had been upfront and honest about what their intentions were going into the G20 protests. I mean, the goal of these protests is always to shut down the meeting. That's not a secret from anyone.
Right. Since 99. And, yeah.
So by the way, when I'm talking about these arrests at Queen's Park, that wasn't the beginning of the arrest. I mean, they've been arresting people here all week. There's 50 arrests before the first protest. Like I'm saying, in the days leading up to the protests, they were arresting people coming into town, particularly targeting activists and protesters from the province of Quebec.
Right.
They're pretty easy to identify because they speak a different language than us and they have a different license plate on their vehicles. The French Canadians protest better than English Canadians do. That's just the way it is.
Right.
They have, because of the French background, they have a longer, prouder history of, you know, civil liberties.
Right.
So
they were cracking down on folks that were coming in to protest. They would, I guess, run them.
Without a doubt. Anyone who was wearing black and had a license plate from out of town would have been pulled over and checked out and possibly arrested. In the days leading up to the protest, which is how we discovered that the provincial government had secretly passed this legislation, which gave the police extended powers for the duration of the summit.
Oh, really? Tell us about that.
Well, what happened was they used these extended powers to arrest somebody last Thursday. I guess there was still well-organized legal support going into it. One of the brighter lawyers kind of questioned on what basis he was arrested and found that the police had these secret powers. Immediately it went to the media.
Okay.
Everybody knew about it.
Wow.
By the time the summit was taking place.
Uh-huh.
But it is something that was done in secret by our provincial government using an obscure piece of World War II era legislation that they just seemed to tweak a little bit. So they weren't really writing a new law. So they were able to keep it a secret by not making it a new law, which would have had to have been approved in Parliament, just changing, making small changes to an existing law.
So,
but an obscure law,
right,
from many years ago that was designed to keep us safe from our wartime enemies.
Now, how many?
It was designed to keep us safe from fascists. It wasn't meant to increase the fascist power of the police on our streets.
How many people are still in jails right now?
This is a good question. I can't even get an accurate number of how many people were arrested. 900 is the number that's being flown around in the media, but that number, I think it's easily a couple hundred more than that.
Okay.
The reason is because over 850 have been released, and I'm hearing stories from friends about people who are still on the inside And as of earlier today, what I was hearing was more than 100 people still inside. But the newspapers aren't actually covering this. Nobody really knows how many people were arrested or how many people remain detained at this point.
I believe there was some jail solidarity. I haven't looked into it. I should look
into it. There have been people sitting out in front of that jail, which incidentally is an abandoned movie studio. It's not a jail. It's just... It's similar to what they did at the RNC when it was in New York City. They've just taken a derelict building and turned it into a jail for the weekend.
Right. So tell us what happened on, what was it, Saturday night. There was a protest rally, and then the cops came in and started arresting people at will.
The stories I've been hearing are the cops have been arresting people at will for the entire weekend. But what I will say is that on Saturday, they seem to have let the protesters kind of get away with a bunch of stuff. And my theory on that is that it was that is how they justified their incredibly harsh actions the following day.
And what happened?
Well, the following day, they were rounding up people who were peacefully protesting on the streets. And these are people that are mostly protesting the fact that... these are our streets, and it looks like a police state.
I saw a video on YouTube of at least 3 to 4 officers run out from the riot line and grab people and just yank them.
I believe that video was taken in front of at one of the many protests out in front of the detention center.
Yeah. Well, really.
I believe they had ordered everyone to leave. The crowd had decided to comply and leave. The police said that people who left would not be arrested, and then the police proceeded to arrest people who were obeying their order to leave.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that troubles me is that the police are doing here what we've seen happen at other similar large protests across North America and, in fact, around the world, which is detaining people with no legal basis for what I would think is an extraordinary amount of time, over 24 hours, and then releasing them without charge.
Yeah, yeah.
These are illegal detentions, and this would cover the vast majority of the people that were arrested at the protest. Out of the, say, 1,000, 1,100, 1,200 who were arrested, 850 have already been released without charge. And this is an attempt to crack down on possibly 50 or so people who were, you know, causing a small amount of vandalism that was mostly aimed at our big banks.
Yeah, we saw footage of that on Democracy Now, where Starbucks was broken and McDonald's and all the big corporate windows were broken.
Well, that is to be expected at this kind of protest. I'm hard pressed to think of a protest along these lines that hasn't happened. So I would suggest that any windows that got smashed were the fault of businesses who should have known better. They should have boarded it up. You know, if you own a Starbucks in downtown Toronto and there's a big G20 protest and...
Well, it's funny because there's footage of people breaking windows all over YouTube and there's no cops to be seen anywhere.
That's because that footage was taken on the Saturday. And what the police did was they let them do that in order for them to go over the top immediately following these events. In the eyes of the public here, you know, the police have done a great job, and many people are saying they should have come down harder on the criminals. That's the way people talk. But that's, I don't have to tell you what I think of that. I mean, it's the result of... an incredible amount of propaganda.
Right.
Because the police let people light police cars on fire and smash a few windows on Saturday, they were able to engage in wanton violence and mass arrests for the next 48 hours.
That was interesting.
Without anyone in the public questioning it, except for the people who were unlucky enough to witness these events.
Right.
Because, as usual, they're obviously not shown properly on television.
Yes, of course.
Television, you see the same guy kicking in the Starbucks window over and over and over again for 24 hours. It was like watching 9/11.
Yeah.
You know, you just see the same image over and over and over again.
Yeah,
I can understand how that would make members of the public mad.
Yeah.
But they're not seeing the whole picture. And I would question whether they're actually, what they're actually seeing is violence. Breaking, hurting an inanimate object, you're not really hurting anything.
Right.
They're mostly bank windows. And let me tell you something, Bob. You know, you had a financial crisis in the States. We had a similar one up here. And the people of Canada gave our banks, the richest companies in the country, $125 billion. That was the size of their bailout. And they're worried about a few smashed windows. I'd say they got off lightly.
Yeah.
I mean, $125 billion. I'll tell you what, take the money to fix the windows out of the $125 billion bailout that the people of Canada just gave you. How about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sorry I'm a little...
It's okay.
...passionate. And, you know, I am angry. I'm frustrated. Where we're really being screwed here is in the media. The government forces and the police forces have got to hand it to them. They've run an incredible propaganda campaign leading up to this, and I didn't think people were buying it because I guess the people that I talk to in my day-to-day life didn't buy it. But it's quite obvious to me from watching television and reading, you know, reading the newspapers that's a lot of people believe that it's the a handful of protesters that are to blame for all this, and you know, forget the civil liberties and forget everything else.
Right.
It's all about punishing a couple window breakers. It's really sickening.
Well, we've been talking with Ron Anisich. Used to produce Bad Cop No Donut, and thought I'd ask you, hey, are you going to be producing that anytime soon again? Come on, man.
I do get asked that a lot, but I'm involved in just a few personal projects that are kind of going to be keeping me away from that. But when things like this happen, Bob, I got to say it makes me think that I should be doing more journalism.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I would ever do the same thing again, but...
Right. It was a great show. It was an
awesome
show.
I think that I could make some contributions in other areas, too, probably. For me, it was almost disappointing to only focus on the police because I look around and I see a world with a lot more problems.
Right.
So... I mean, I would like to, make an effort, perhaps with a different issue in the future. Gonna have to give that some serious thought. It's times like this that make me think that that's a really good idea, because really the media, I went to journalism school. I know what journalists are like. I think they could be doing a much better job right now. As well as even the union leaders and politicians, nobody's really getting the point. And I'm thinking to myself, on the one hand, I have a bunch of protesters who might have broken some windows, and then I have when it comes down to putting a bank through a rock through the window of a bank, perfectly honestly, that is the kind of political message I can get behind. That's the kind of political statement that I think does speak for me. And meanwhile, there are these people that are spending all my money, spending all of our collective money, handing it out to banks and, holding these meetings behind these giant barricades. They're so afraid of the people who elected them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know where I'm going with this. It's almost depressing.
Yeah.
Almost depressing.
I appreciate you calling in, Ron Anisich, calling in from Toronto, Canada. Give us an update on the G20.
One thing people can do if they're interested in helping out is, there are still people who are in detention, and so there's if people are interested in helping out, that's where the effort's needed right now, making your voices heard and helping us get those people who are still locked up back where they belong.
All right.
So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ron. Take care of yourself. All right. Take care. Bye. Freak Radio 101 FM, freakradio.org, Ron Anisich. Sorry, a little rough on using the phone there. Covering the G20 here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101 FM, freakradio.org. And I have another report here I want to play. It's from Real News. It's about a journalist that was attacked during the G20. We're going to hear that right now. All right, stay tuned.
Welcome to the Real News Network. I'm Jesse Freeston reporting from the G20 Summit in Toronto. On Saturday afternoon, outside the Toronto G20 meetings, a group of people dressed in black, using a tactic known as the Black Bloc, smashed windows of corporate franchises and banks, and burned police vehicles. After weeks of suggesting that the reason for a $1 billion police presence was precisely to stop such groups, when the time came, the police were nowhere to be seen. So far, there have been no reports of people being hurt by the Black Bloc. The same cannot be said about the Toronto Police. During a press conference with Toronto Chief of Police William Blair, following the Black Bloc events, Real News senior editor Paul Jay asked about a different confrontation.
On television this morning, before the Black Bloc tactic was used, the images on CNN and a lot of local television were of what happened yesterday, and there were images of police officers hitting and kicking demonstrators. And I have to say, one of our own journalists was punched in the face, and we have video footage of that. My question is, are you aware of the incident, and are you going to investigate it, and will there be some public explanation about why there was that type of confrontation and violence?
Fortunately, Paul, I'm very aware of the incident, and we were videotaping it as well. We videotaped all aspects of that. One of the things the media missed yesterday was a large cadre of a Black Bloc dressed people in the center of that crowd. As it approached along College Street, they began to throw things at my officers. It was necessary for my people to put their helmets on, and it was also necessary for us to go into that crowd and arrest some of the people that were attacking them. That all of that was videoed. Now, if your reporter wishes to make a complaint of any kind against the police, there's a proper format to do that, and I urge you either to contact us in writing and have them do that, or he can call the Office of the Independent Police Review I'm not going to comment on...
I'm not asking you to, because I know you can't, but well, we will also make our footage available to you, because in our footage, there's no view of any kind of Black Bloc tactic in that incident. We'll be happy to share it with you.
I have photographs of that, and actually they were taken right from the balcony outside my office. I'll be more than happy to share all of the media.
Here's what happened from my perspective. A few thousand people left Allen Gardens Park for a peaceful march entitled Justice for Our Communities. At some point, order came for the police to put on their riot gear. Minutes later, a marcher named Imo Motimi Azorbo was detained by police and taken into a nearby Winners clothing store. Police then surrounded the entrance. It was later discovered that Azorbo was arrested for ignoring police orders. Azorbo is deaf. His friends and supporters had gathered around demanding his immediate release and trying to explain his deafness to police. Contrary to the police chief's statement, there was no Black Bloc in the vicinity. Then police began to violently clear all people and media out of the area. I was filming the assaults and clearly wearing my press credentials. I was forcefully removed. As I was being thrown out, the man beside me was punched clear off his feet by an officer. A group of officers then threw me on their bikes and I was punched in the face twice. Immediately afterward, I asked the officer why he punched me.
Is it your orders to punch journalists in the face? Today.
Hold the line.
When I tried to ask the supervisor for more details, another officer appeared and snatched my microphone.
What are you doing? That's my mic!
Get out!
Give me my mic!
I want my mic back!
How can you attack the media?
Then kicked it further behind the police line. I was told to leave immediately while officers jabbed me with their bike handle. Other journalists gathered to demand my mic be returned, and after a few minutes, it was thrown back to me.
Thank you. All right. Does it still work?
More police were then called in to fortify the building. Azorbo was eventually transferred to a jail, and his friends say that he was held in custody for an additional day without independent translation before being released.
More than 400 people have been arrested this week, currently being held at an old film studio on Eastern Avenue, including numerous mass arrests of peaceful demonstrations and targeting of community organizers. On Saturday night, police arrested and beat up Guardian correspondent Jesse Rosenfeld. Numerous other journalists have shared his fate. I include my own story here not to draw attention to the fact that I was punched, but to the fact that when police attack journalists, they are attacking a basic democratic right, the public's right to know what's going on.
Hey! Hey! What are you doing? You fuck!
Raging mob across the nerve! Tonight it's a blast. Tomorrow you're homeless. Tonight it's a blast. Tomorrow you're homeless.